Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. It's never an easy call with so many problems in the world to know where to direct the money that you donate when you want to help out in this world. But what I can tell you is that when you donate to CAMH, you're saving lives. We know about the opioid crisis. We know about the mental health crisis. They are doing the work. Help change mental health care forever. Your support will help CAMH build a future where no one is left behind. Donate at CAMH.ca/CanadaLand to help us treat addiction and build hope. Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures, and it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to canadaland.com/join. And thank you. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Tunnel Bear, the simple privacy app that makes it easy to access a more open internet and browse privately. Go to freetunnelbear.com and use it for free. This episode is also brought to you by Squarespace, the easiest way to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store for you and your ideas. Start building your website today at squarespace.com. Use the offer code CanadaLand at checkout. You'll get 10% off. Saudi Arabia executed 47 men this year all at once, including a cleric. They called the men terrorists. Others called it a slaughter of the monarchy's political enemies following a rigged trial. Saudi Arabia killed 97 civilians. A Saudi-led airstrike into Yemen, according to Human Rights Watch, killed at least 97 civilians when they bombed a crowded marketplace. The attack is considered unlawful by international law. It may have in fact been a war crime. So, should we sell them weapons? Here is the argument in favor of selling Saudi Arabia Canadian-made light armored vehicles. Massive tanks, machine guns on the top. Here's the argument in favor of doing so from Stéphane Dion's office. What they argued was that this is a necessary thing in order for Canada to maintain leverage on Saudi Arabia. What are we going to do with that leverage to make the world a better place? Well, Stéphane Dion's office noted that current Canada-Saudi relations have led to 16,000 Saudi students studying here in Canada, which, they said, will help to promote a greater appreciation of Canadian values, including the importance of diversity and gender equality. They actually made that argument. More pragmatically, Stéphane Dion's office said, look, if we drop the contract, we will simply hand the contract to another non-Canadian and possibly more ambivalent provider. If we didn't give them weapons, somebody else would, and that somebody may be somebody who's, you know, not as upstanding a global citizen as Canada. So that is the Liberal Party's position now that they are the Liberal government. Here is what they had to say about it beforehand. These are all quotes from people who are now working for the Liberal government before they were doing so, when this arms deal was an arms deal between a conservative government and Saudi Arabia. And these quotes I've read before, but they bear repeating. "We've allowed an arms sale to trump human rights," said Roland Paris, who is a professor at University of Ottawa. Now he's a foreign policy advisor to Justin Trudeau. Here's another quote. "Saudi Arabia has bought the silence of Western countries by awarding them lucrative contracts." That's what Jocelyn Coulon said. Jocelyn Coulon being a political analyst, journalist, and international research expert. And Jocelyn Coulon said that before taking a job as Stéphane Dion's advisor. When talking about the conservative government's deal with Saudi Arabia, Gerald Butts said, "principled foreign policy indeed." I think he was being sarcastic. Gerry Butts, of course, is now Justin Trudeau's top advisor. That's what they all said then. You won't hear them saying that now. You will not hear them coming out against the Saudi arms deal because it is their deal. It is not, as the Liberal government led us to believe, an inherited deal, a grandfathered deal, a done deal. That's what Stéphane Dion called it, a done deal. The Conservatives made the deal. What can we do? We're not going to back out of it. It wasn't our deal. It was a done deal. No. We know now that that is not true. The brunt of this deal was okayed directly by Stéphane Dion. Most of the $15 billion deal, he had the power to stop. Instead, he approved it. We know that because of the Globe and Mail's reporting. We know that because of Globe and Mail reporter Stephen Chase. This is the Liberal government's first major scandal, or at least it should be. Stephen Chase joins me in a moment. Wait for it. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Nicholas, Adam, Martin Scherer, John McGMA, Genevieve Russell, Eric Martinez, Emma Prestwich, and Sherwin Arnott. Sherwin, why did you decide to be awesome?
Because the interviews with journalists and editors give us a really cool window into what they were thinking and sometimes what they weren't thinking. And Canada Land just makes me less.
This episode is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. Trust is important. There are a lot of mattress lies out there, a lot of mattress liars. And I didn't intend the pun, but it occurred to me that there is one as I was saying those words. Listen, I am not lying to you. I have experienced the Douglas mattress. It is an exceptional mattress at a surprisingly affordable price point. It is a mattress that sleeps cool, doesn't have that weird thing in the summer where the mattress gets like an oven. It's a very good product. It's delivered to your house in a box. You don't have to go to a big mattress store. It is a medium firm mattress, which is what Canadians prefer. And it comes with a 365-night trial and a 20-year warranty. What more can I tell you? Douglas is giving our listeners a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. This episode is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. We hear a lot about the opioid crisis. We talk a lot about the mental health crisis. These are serious problems. These problems affect us all. They've affected my life and my community. They're not intractable problems. I don't know what's going to solve them on a policy level, but day to day, helping people, that's what CAMH does. They do it on the ground when people need help, and they do it through research. The team at CAMH gave our team a tour of their facilities, and we were really just blown away by the incredible, heroic work that they're doing every day. They treat everyone with dignity, and their research is seeking and finding real solutions for everyone around the world. Help change mental health care forever. Your support will help CAMH build a future where no one is left behind. Donate at CAMH.ca/CanadaLand to help CAMH treat addiction and build hope.
Grumpy.
This episode is also brought to you by Tunnel Bear, the simple privacy app that makes it easy to access a more open internet and browse privately. It's very easy to use Tunnel Bear. You just choose a country in the app, you turn Tunnel Bear on, and then you watch your bear tunnel your internet connection to your new secured location. It's like you're surfing the internet from a foreign country. Why would you want to do that? What is the point of surfing the internet as if you were an American? Well, you can see the prices that Americans pay for things. They're often very different prices than Canadians pay for flights and for products. So you can avoid price discrimination. If you're surfing the internet through public Wi-Fi, you can secure your connection by using Tunnel Bear. Instead of using the open connection of a coffee shop or airport, you are now protected because everything that happens on Tunnel Bear is encrypted and they keep no logs of your behavior. So it's a powerful tool for your own safety and privacy. You know what? You might use it just because you believe privacy is a basic right. You simply want privacy. Tunnel Bear has apps for iOS, Android, PC, and Mac, plus a Chrome extension, and it's free. The first 500 megabytes are free. Go to freetunnelbear.com, start using it. You don't pay anything until you bust through that 500 megabyte cap. You don't have to give them a credit card. Check it out. It's kind of fun to use. It's very useful. This episode is also brought to you by Squarespace, the easiest way to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store for you and your ideas. It is a very fun and easy and simple way to get a website up and running quickly. And the easiness doesn't end with the creation of that website, with the publishing of the website. You get your own URL, everything set up, but the maintenance of that website. They have tech support 24/7, and you don't have to muck about under the hood. Everything has been tested. Everything has been worked out in advance. You're not building it from scratch. It's been beautifully designed, the back end, the front end, by beautiful designers. You just plug in your own information and you've got a website. Your site will look professionally designed regardless of your skill level. You don't have to do any coding at all, but you can if you know how to and want to. It's intuitive. It's easy to use. You get a free domain if you sign up for a year. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com. And when you decide to sign up, use the offer code CanadaLand. You will get 10% off of your first purchase. Stephen, how did you come to this story in the first place?
It was back in 2014 when the Conservatives announced this deal. And at the time, we wrote a story, pretty perfunctory story, pointing out that the contract had been signed and pointing out that Saudi Arabia was had a bad reputation for human rights. But it wasn't until the Raif Badawi case in end of 2014, early 2015, where we really started to take notice of this. Here we had a man, his family had taken refuge in Canada. They live in Sherbrooke, Quebec. And a man whose crime was a heresy, apostasy, was questioning the existence of God and writing it to that effect, who was sentenced to 10 years in jail and, you know, hundreds and hundreds of lashes. And we had this going on while we were still digesting what this deal was all about. And so it seemed really incongruous that we were doing business with this country. And that just raised a lot of questions like, you know, let's learn more about this deal. What does it entail? And those simple questions we couldn't answer. The government was essentially blocked us at every turn. There was no transparency in terms of exactly what we were selling them, what the shipment dates were, how this was justified under export control laws. We sort of got, you know, shut down at every turn. So then we started to ask more questions. We started to submit access to information forms and start to sort of probe and dig and pull. And we did get some luck because we started to find out, for instance, that the government hadn't even done a human rights assessment of Saudi Arabia in years. Yet they'd signed this deal. We got information under access information that showed sort of assiduously the government had courted the Saudis. The ambassador at the time was so happy about the deal, he wrote an email back to Ottawa that just said in big capital letters, "Gotta love the Lavs." So this was interesting. I don't usually see diplomats talking like that. And so every time we pulled, more information came out. And that's why the story kept going. We'd found that they'd run the deal past the Israelis to see what they thought of it. And we also found what, and this proved to be very important for what happened in April, we found that when they asked about whether they can get sort of an advanced green light, they were told, and this is all in writing, by the Export Control Division, this deal isn't approved and guaranteed and sanctioned until the export permits are approved. We cannot give you those kind of assurances. You're going to have to put the export permits applications in, and then we're going to have to do the assessment. And the assessment, of course, is the human rights situation in Saudi Arabia. Is this justified? Is this a risk for human rights? And so on and so forth. So the stories kept popping out one by one, and we did about 15 stories before the election. And then in January, this last year, you had the biggest mass execution in Saudi Arabia in decades, and one of the people killed was this popular cleric, this Shia Muslim cleric, who was a real critic of the House of Saud. So immediately we went to the government. We said, you know, we see Mr. Dion criticizing these executions, and yet proceeding with the deal. And so we thought, so please explain the sort of how you balance these off, and please explain what's going on here. And so it sort of, in a sense, fueled the story again and prompted us to ask questions and continue to push and to prod and stuff. And of course, information kept coming out. We learned about the fact that these were not only were these armored vehicles, but they in fact were being equipped with medium gauge machine guns and anti-tank weapons, cannons. There was a human rights assessment report being prepared that they weren't going to release to us. And so it just kept going. And often the government, I think, was the author of its own misfortune. And by the government, I also don't just say the Liberal government, but the permanent government, the bureaucracy at the Global Affairs, which really blocked us at every turn. What had happened is Daniel Terp, who's a professor at the University of Montreal, and he had launched a lawsuit, an appeal, notice for application and review at the federal court, challenging the government's decision to allow these exports, and in fact saying it was against the law to allow the export, to issue the export permits for this application. So what happens is the government actually replied to Terp's lawsuit with way more than we expected. They came through with a document that was a stamp secret and was in fact the rationale for approving the export permits. What we learned was that, in fact, Mr. Dion was the one who signed the export permits. For months and months and months, we'd been asking the government, please give us the export permits, please give us the rationale behind the export permits. And time and time again, the answer was, not, we haven't signed them, or we're not there yet. It was, we will not comment on this for reasons of commercial confidentiality. But lo and behold, Mr. Terp, dropped in his lap is a copy of the rationale for signing the export permits that includes Mr. Dion's signature at the bottom. So in fact, the decision to green light the bulk of this $15 billion sale was made by Mr. Dion and not, as everybody had thought, by the Conservatives.
Well, why did everybody think that?
Because the Conservatives announced the deal in 2014, and every time that we discussed the rationale, we weren't told it hasn't been signed yet. We were told you can't have it.
During the campaign, when Justin Trudeau was challenged on this, will you support this deal? As I remember, he said, "Well, I you know, it's a done deal." Was that his language?
He talked about this being a contract between a company and the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, so sort of effectively distancing Ottawa from it, and also saying these are really just jeeps and that we will honor the contract. This took place roughly a week before the Liberals were elected, and they knew they were in a position to do very well at that point.
So, yeah, Trudeau, I remember saying that they're just jeeps, not mentioning that they're jeeps that are more like tanks and have machine guns on the top. But whose phrase was that? It's a done deal. Where do I remember that from?
That comes from Mr. Dion, and that we got to go to January 2016. We've just seen a mass execution in Saudi Arabia. Mr. Dion goes on TV and he talks to Rosie Barton at CBC, and he says the deal is done. The deal was done. Deal is done. We can't reverse that.
So you've been on the story for a while. I mean, we kind of touched it a little bit. We talked it from a very different angle, just in terms of the Griffin Prize and this wealthy Mr. Griffin, who's got this poetry prize, and he's also got an interest in this arms company. And after our story by Michael Lister came out on that, Griffin cut off his ties to that arms company. During the election, it kind of almost became an election issue, but there was that sense like, well, what are we going to do about this? It's Trudeau tried to downplay it, and there was also a sense that they could kind of evade it being, you know, their problem, because this was something that the Conservatives put in place, and then we actually had that kind of like said in a very definitive way by Dion later that it's a done deal, and then when you try to get more clarity on it, it's commercial, you know, confidentiality. So what your reporting revealed is that was really a lie. I mean, that wasn't true at all.
Well, I'm not going to accuse the Conservatives, or sorry, the Liberals of lying in this case. What I'm going to say is that they had a far more substantial role in ensuring this deal went through than we believed before. The decision to approve the export permits is an important step in basically sanctioning or giving assurances to a deal. And it's not the contract alone that does that. that's our position at the Globe.
Okay, I appreciate your modulating, you know, the strength of the language here. They said it's a done deal. Was it a done deal when Dion said it was a done deal?
Well, I think it depends how you parse the language. There was a contract signed between the federal government and the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, but that doesn't prejudge the export permit process. The government often is fond of boasting that we have one of the best arms control regimes in the world. That process, determining whether or not these are suitable to ship, is separate from any contract. The government can't go signing contracts, in this case the Defense Export Corporation, which is called the Canadian Commercial Corporation, and then simply circumvent the export approval process, or else it doesn't mean anything. So in this case, we do know from access to information requests that we received last year that, in fact, the previous government was trying to seek assurances from the export control folks at DFAT that this is a done deal, right? This is okay, it's going to pass for sure. And what they were told, and this is in writing, we have this in emails, is the Debbie Gowling of the Export Control Division told the government, listen, I don't see any red flags to begin with, but there will be no assurances, no guarantees that this deal is approved until we see the export permit applications. Circumstances may have evolved.
Uh-huh.
So she tells them that in 2013, she reiterates that in 2014. So that again, it bolsters the idea the export approval process is a separate process. You can't just sign deals and then skirt the rules that the government has long boasted are some of the best in the world, and which say that if you're going to be shipping to a country with a poor human rights record, you have to scrutinize the situation really carefully, and you have to determine there's no demonstrable risk that these goods could be used against civilians, and you must look at the situation with regards to whether it's involved in hostilities, such as, of course, Saudi Arabia is right now in Yemen.
In Yemen, yeah. And I mean, what I took from your reporting was that it was entirely within Dion's power to stop this deal.
Yes, it is.
As a point of process, and also in terms of should new information arise about their hostilities and human rights abuses, that case could have clearly been made as well.
He has the power to suspend permits or not to issue them in the first place, and that isn't affected by any contracts the government signed.
Now, you mentioned Terp as an academic, but he's not like a neutral player in the political scene, right?
No, he's a former Pequist. He was a Bloc MP and a PQ MP, member of the National Assembly. And he has previously taken the government to court, for instance, on the Harper government's sort of exiting from the Kyoto Accord. So he has a history of taking things to the courts.
And what's he motivated by here? What's he trying to prove?
Well, his argument is that he thinks that this is a country with an abysmal human rights record, where it's very likely that the things that Canada sells them will be used in ways that we don't approve of and, in fact, will violate human rights, and that there's no way the government can justify this under its export control rules.
Does that case have a chance of winning?
I don't think so, because the export control regime is largely a creature of cabinet. That is, the Canadian government, the cabinet, has the authority to lots of wiggle room if it wants to. And the export control regime rules are not written in law. They are regulations attached to a export control law. And I don't think they're that strong.
But other countries have basically come out against dealing and selling arms to the Saudis and have made it a point of law that they're forbidden to do so. And
well, you've seen expressions of this. One of the sort of the background stories is that the human rights situation in Saudi Arabia, critics would argue, has been eroding over the last year, 2 years. Now, you could point to situations such as women being allowed to vote in municipal elections there. These elections, incidentally, are responsible for their councillors that are elected responsible for things like waste disposal and so on. But on the whole, if you talk to groups like Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, they would argue things have been getting worse in Saudi Arabia in the last year or two. And so what you've seen around the world is responses to that. You saw the members of the European Parliament vote urging their member countries to consider bans. You've seen the Dutch Parliament urging their government to do so as well. In the case of Germany, they have rejected several transactions in the past, I would say 2 years, including tanks and a particular kind of rifle. And you saw the Flemish Parliament in Belgium also announce a ban on weapon sales.
Mm-hmm. Take me back to that moment where Terp gives you this information. You know, you'd been working this story for some time. It's no surprise why he would approach you with what he'd found. sometimes when we're reporting things, we know something to be true, we just don't have the proof. Did you know that this was true, or was it a surprise to you to learn that Dion had signed?
I was completely surprised. I had assumed that this had been taken care of under the Conservatives, because that would surely have locked down the deal, right? But I was surprised that it wasn't. And what was really interesting was the timing. So you have Terp come out in the press in late February, signaling he's going to bring this lawsuit, signaling he's going to challenge the export permits. And so obviously the government of Canada had some advance notice of this. And then the day he files it, March 21st in federal court, is the exact same date on the memo submitted to Dion to make sure the permits get pushed through. So he gets this on March 21st, and then Dion signs on April 8th. So the timing was really interesting, because it would have been quite remarkable if the government had come back to TERP and said, you know what, these export permits haven't been signed yet, so you know, you're challenging our export permits, and in fact it hasn't been done yet. So it was, the timing was very interesting to me. The fact that this hadn't been secured under the Conservatives, because it's a sort of a central part and parcel of making sure these deals go through, as I talked about with those access to information emails we discovered. And so, yeah, I was really surprised, and I thought that meant that actually the Liberals had effectively taken ownership of this by being the ones to assess the situation, decide that this was an acceptable shipment, and stamp approval on that shipment.
Yeah, I think because of what you reported, it becomes fair to consider this. It's now the Liberals' arms deal. It's not the Conservatives' arms deal. And you bring up an interesting hypothetical there, that had it not been approved yet, we may have been having a different conversation. Because right now the conversation is about the dishonesty and whatever light exists between the way that the Liberals are presenting this as a done deal and the reality. And is there hypocrisy there, which the Globe and Mail has said, that that Liberals have been acting hypocritically in this. But instead, the conversation might have been, should we do this? The actual ethical conversation, are the jobs worth giving arms to a murderous, misogynistic country that's involved in foreign hostilities, and who knows what these Canadian-made LAVs might be used to do, and should we be in the business of doing this? We've never really had that conversation.
No, we didn't. And to be fair, I mean, the Conservatives are the one who sought this contract out and signed it. The Liberals are the one who approved the shipment of arms. So it's, I think there's part and parcel responsibility there shared. But it would have been a very interesting dynamic if you had Mr. Terp come to the press and reveal that, in fact, the stamp of approval, the green light, the sanctioning hadn't been applied, and in fact, you know, it was an open question: should we allow these things? I really need to stress that what Mr. Dion signed on April 8th is very important. He basically, if you read the document, it's a rationale for why we should do this and why there's no real human rights concerns that should stop it, which I think critics would argue is more debatable than that. The government, when they consulted, at least on paper, it says they only consulted government departments to see whether there was human rights concerns. They consulted the Department of Foreign Affairs, the Department of Industry, which is now called Innovation, and the Department of National Defense, all of which you might very well argue are institutionally in favor of this deal, because they all played a role, particularly D&D and Global Affairs, in ensuring it came together. In fact, that's part of the backstory of the reporting over the last 15 months.
So I take your point that they were cherry-picking who they asked about human rights abuses, but does that mean they didn't know about Saudi human rights abuses? Did Dion have that information at his fingertips when making this decision?
Well, the question they were supposed to be asking is, can we demonstrate that there is no reasonable risk that these weapons would be used to commit human rights violations? And that was the question they were supposed to answer. And so the consultations took place with those parties. And the only answer we got from that in the memorandum, which was, of course, released with Mr. Terp, was that they had no evidence, which critics had argued is not quite the same, meeting the same test as what the Export Control Act or the Export Control Rules call for.
So I think that the charge of hypocrisy is well substantiated when you kind of compare the positions that these people had before that they were in power, or before they were working for the Liberals, with where they stand now. These are some of the most vocal critics of Canada having this kind of relationship with Saudi Arabia.
I think it's different when you get into power, because you face the prospect of being accused of killing jobs. That is the real factor here. You have, we're in a weak economy. The economic growth has not really rebounded like we'd expected. And especially centered in southwestern Ontario, you have 2,000 plus jobs that could be said to depend on this. We've never been given a clear sense of how you know, they depend solely on this or not. But I think any party that gets into power has to wrestle with that. And the Conservative and the Liberals certainly have closed the book on that debate.
So I just want to see this from your perspective as the journalist who has this bit of information from TERP, which was shocking to you, completely upset the narrative. I think represents the first real potential scandal for this new government that has been really enjoying an unprecedented level of popular support and, you know, photo opportunity and viral moment after viral moment. And here you've got something that undercuts the narrative of the Liberal Party. This is maybe the most incendiary news story in Canada at the time. Take me through what it was like for you bringing that to press, knowing that TERP has a position on this, that he's hoping for you to carry water for him as well. What are the things you've got to juggle and what's it like running these stories as you have for the Globe and Mail? And, you know, talk about the response from the Liberal Party as well.
Well, I guess for us, it's just been a question of just continuing to pull at this thread. You know, going back to 2014, when this deal was signed, it was very strange the way it was announced. The press conference in London, Ontario, which most of us participated in by conference call, they wouldn't even name the country. They called it, they said the client or the customer. It was only the Conservative Party, which was so tickled pink about it, that let us know that this, in fact, was Saudi Arabia. So it's been a really frustrating process over the last 15 months, trying to get information out about this. The Saudis refused to talk to us. General Dynamics, which is the manufacturer in London, Ontario, has largely refused to discuss this at all. And the government of the day, whatever stripe they were, has largely not lifted a finger in terms of transparency and openness here. If Mr. TERP had not filed that lawsuit, I'm not sure we would know this. And that is really, for me, one of the most interesting developments in this case, is that somebody who has sort of a history of being a bit of a professional gadfly, in fact, managed to pull something out of the government that they'd been unwilling to discuss for the last 6 months. And, of course, the previous government had been unwilling to discuss for 12 months prior. So it was really interesting and surprising for me to see what a court case could do. And I do believe that it wouldn't have come out if it wasn't for for the lawsuit.
We, you know, don't choose where the truth comes from. That, you know, there's this, I think, idea that sources should just be purely motivated by wanting to bring truth to light. You take the truth from wherever it comes. And the truth in politics often comes from people who have partisan positions or ideological differences. They want to make their case. That's fine. I think the responsibility of a journalist is just to make sure that it's true. But it's radioactive what you had. I mean, it's a really hot potato. I have to imagine that this was something that got the attention of David Walmsley, that everybody at the Globe and Mail knew that this was a heavy story. And to the Globe's credit, you've been pulling that thread consistently, and I think it's become a very strong point of reporting. Tell me about whatever you can about blowback. You know, the early days of a relationship between the Globe and Mail and this government. I'm sure that the Globe is, I'm not going to say the Globe and Mail is influenced by what the Liberal Party thinks of the Globe and Mail, but I'm sure they're very aware of how that relationship is progressing. What's it like just navigating a story like this?
Well, I mean, the government has been pretty, professional. There's no screaming matches, there's no yelling, there's no... they've been pretty up and up in terms of the level of politeness and so on. In terms of answers, though, what I've been frustrated by, and this is the same as the last government, is what they tended to do over the last 6 months is instead of answering the case or the questions, they kick them to the department, which is kind of like... being sent to purgatory. The department has a far slower reaction time. It often produces these anodyne boilerplate lines, and they don't answer the questions. So for much of the 6 months, what I'd found is Mr. Dion's office would kick it to the department, and the department would come back with essentially mush. And that was very frustrating. And so that was largely the dynamic was, and then there are exceptions to this, but ask the minister's office, ask the Department of Global Affairs, gets kicked to the Department of Global Affairs into huge email chains where people say they're working on it and they're going to get back to you. And then you get like pablum. You get nothing. So none of your carefully constructed questions, none of the information you're hoping to get out will come out. And that's been the biggest frustration in it. Obviously, the government is not happy with the idea that they've taken political ownership of this story, of this contract, and they're not happy about that. But generally, it's been a bit of a tussle with the bureaucracy. And of course, many journalists have probably experienced the same thing, where you just get kicked into the department's communications unit, and it could take days to get answers, and the answers aren't even worth waiting for.
Well, since this became the Liberals' problem because of your stories, Stéphane Dion did make himself available to the editorial board, and it seems like he's thrown his body over the grenade, and he's trying to survive it himself, and maybe he is surviving it. But if he had the power to stop this, then Justin Trudeau had the power to stop this. And it's not as if Justin Trudeau was not aware of this file. Why do you think the questions haven't gone up that high? I mean, have they effectively siloed this? Is it right to pose these questions to Trudeau?
I think it's right to. I think that we keep getting re-recorded to Mr. Dion because it's his I guess the assumption is it's his responsibility to handle this and handle this mess. What happened on April 8th is the Liberal government, the existing government of Canada, assessed the risk and the problems with exporting weapons to Saudi Arabia and decided it was okay. That's what's important about that. They didn't need to do that. They have complete power to suspend permits or to rescind permits or not to allow permits. So yeah, I mean, it's certainly Mr. Trudeau's to answer as well. And it is largely being sort of redirected towards Mr. Dion. But I find that Mr. Trudeau has sort of, he's settled on this narrative that we're honoring the contract and it would hurt our good name abroad. That seems to be the line he returns to when he gets asked about it now.
And if he ever gets evidence that they're doing anything they shouldn't, he'll stop the contract then.
Yes, and I guess what critics have asked is, you've seen a lot of things take place in Saudi Arabia in the last 2 years, the crackdowns in Saudi Arabia, the mass executions, prosecuting a war in Yemen where the United Nations, the United Nations panel is accusing you of human rights violations. And so often the question I get from people who follow the arms trade is, if not this, what will it take? What will it take before the government would suspend permits? And I'm not sure how much of a smoking gun they're going to need before they would do that. It's not clear.
You can call me a cynic, but I doubt pretty strongly that we're going to see this contract be canceled. Does that sound like an extreme position for me to take?
I imagine that they'd want a pretty clear-cut case that there is abuse taking place before they would do that. But there are many instances you can find of right now where the laughs we've already made are being used to fight the war in Yemen. And of course, the Saudis have been called to take in a task by the UN for human rights abuses there. In this case, it's because of the indiscriminate bombing of civilians. But it would seem that we'd already passed a line there, but I guess we haven't.
Well, if you're in that territory of saying, yes, there are human rights abuses, yes, there are hostilities in a foreign country, in Yemen, but at this point, it involves bombs, not the labs that we sold them. You are in pretty dicey territory, I think, from any kind of ethical perspective. Like, we're gonna wait for that? We're going to wait for that before pulling that trigger? I mean,
that's what makes the story so interesting. I mean, there is two sides to this. You have jobs, right, in southwestern Ontario and elsewhere across Canada that are dependent on this. And so I think it's a really interesting debate, and it also reveals something about us as a country, right?
Stephen, let me ask you, this failed to materialize as a serious campaign issue. Didn't seem to resonate with people as something that they were willing to ask of, a party that wanted to form government or make demands. And you could see the Liberals were already kind of hedging then and not taking a strong position, suggesting strongly that they would do nothing to stop it. And now, even with this new information, and again, just to summarize, the information is not only that this government is arming Saudi Arabia, who we know are guilty and responsible for terrible human rights abuses. That is a point of policy of the country, is a completely sexist, misogynistic country. Beyond that, you have exposed a serious misrepresentation from this government. And I don't think we could find any fault with the Globe and Mail for failing to serve this story and give it the space in the paper and follow up. Quite the opposite, I think. Do people care? Does this story have traction with the public?
I think it bothers people. I think it does contrast with their notion of what it means to be Canadian. But I think there's definitely, I mean, I could argue that they're pretty split on whether we should be selling or not. I mean, if you look at the only gauge or monitor I have are the polls. And depending on how you ask the question, there's very few people who actually would support this contract outright. It would range between 20 and 30%, meaning there's 70% or 80% who don't. To sort of, if you flip the question on should human rights outweigh jobs, you get 60% saying, yeah, human rights should outweigh jobs. So I think Canadians are really divided on it. I think that few people in Canada like Saudi Arabia or like the fact that we're dealing with Saudi Arabia. I also think that we're Canadians are scared. We have a weak economy and that every job counts. And high-value manufacturing jobs are something that you don't want to let go, even if it means selling to a country who you really have nothing else in common with.
Yeah, but those polls are only reflective of people who are even engaging with this question. And, you know, as we discussed earlier, we never had a national conversation about this. Yes, there's two sides to this story. Do we favor the jobs or is it okay to put arms in the hands of a country like Saudi Arabia? That's an old ethical question. It's a kind of a classic ethical question. And I think that in Western civilization, we have since maybe World War II, come to the conclusion that if you can kind of prove abuse beyond a certain threshold, no, the jobs aren't worth it. And we all kind of agree to that. And we have laws about that. You know, that's a debate, like that's an established territory. I just am kind of wondering whether people even have an appetite to wrestle with this stuff or consider it part of their universe or anything that they really care about being done in their names by their government.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. Mr. Dion and Mr. Trudeau will not be standing there at the factory in London, Ontario, cutting a ribbon when the first lab rolls off the line.
That's your Canada Land Show. I hope you enjoyed it. You can email me always. I'm at jesse@canadalandshow.com. I read them all and I respond when I can. We are on Twitter @CanadaLand. Our website is canadalandshow.com. Our crowdfunding site is patreon.com/CanadaLand. The next episode of Canada Land Commons will be up on Tuesday. The next episode of Shortcuts will be up on Thursday. I make this show with Katie Jensen. Syndication of Canada Land to campus and community radio across the country is handled by Russell Gregg. If you like what we do, please support us. Hey, I need you to pay close attention to this message. It is not an ad. This is about Canada Land, and this is about you. You need to know that the news crisis is about to get a lot worse. You've heard about the layoffs. We're about to have news closures, and it's very likely that we're going to be seeing the defunding of the CBC. Where are you going to get your information from? What can you do about this? You can support Canada Land. We need you to. And so for this month and this month only, you can become a Canada Land supporter and get everything our supporters get for just $2 a month. That is an almost 80% discount. The clock is ticking on this. It disappears at the end of the month, and then we will not offer it. We need your support. We need to keep news coverage alive in Canada. Go right now to canadaland.com/join. And thank you.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.